Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Well, it's halftime at the legislature. If the first half is when lawmakers throw up bills against the wall to see what sticks, the second half is when what sticks can define a session. Will Hawaii finally get medical marijuana dispensaries? Will the counties be allowed to adopt a new tax surcharge? Will cesspools in Hawaii be prohibitive? And what about all those domestic violence bills? There are hundreds of questions the second half will answer. This evening, we'll find out what Neil Milner and Colin Moore make of the session so far. And we want to hear from you, too. What issues are you continuing to follow? What may be getting your attention for the very first time? Our phone lines are open at 941-3689 if you're on Oahu. That's the number to call, 941-3689. And if you're on the neighbor islands or if you're listening to the live stream someplace else and want to weigh in, you can do that at 877-941-3689. Hello, welcome back.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Same here.
Nice to have you here. Okay, so it feels like it's been a pretty relatively quiet session, not a lot of business outside of the realm of business as usual, or is that just a perception that's unfounded? Neil Milner.
No, I think that's a pretty good way of describing it. There hasn't been a lot of clamor. There haven't been a lot of issues or any issues that scared the pants off the legislators and worried that that would take up the whole session. And we've seen that before. It's been fairly quiet. Things have come up. One of the most important issues that keeps coming up is the appointment to is Ching's appointment to the land board, the DNLR. Yeah. And other than that, what's really going on, I think, is one big issue, and Colin can talk more about the issue specifically in a second. Which is a little bit of a surprise, only about the size of it, and lots of things that have been around for a long time and that people keep saying we're going to settle it, haven't been settled, and are back. So that's pretty much it. The legislature follows a certain kind of rhythm. It's a very cautious place. It starts out frenetically. It gets quieter. And then about from this time on, it starts picking up again until the end when stuff happens so quickly and sometimes so dramatically, you don't know. So that's the context. And I think this legislature is very much like that. And it doesn't have to do with the fact that you now have a quiet governor rather than a flamboyant governor. It just has to do with what's been coming down the pike.
All right, Colin Moore.
Yeah, I agree with Neil's assessment. I mean, we're seeing, so he mentioned a couple of the big issues. And of course, probably the major one is this possibility of extending the surcharge on the general excise tax to fund rail. So that might be kind of a mess they're trying to clean up. Another one, of course, is the Hawaii Health Connector, which they've been dealing with. Then we have a couple of old issues that always seem to come up that are up again here, of course, marijuana, possibly decriminalizing it or at least setting up dispensaries. That is a perennial issue. And the other one, an issue about vacation rentals. That might not have gotten as much press, but another thing that always comes up that the legislature is considering again. And maybe the only new thing, it might not be entirely new, but I think there's more attention put on this session, are the food security bills. There's a lot of bills related to agriculture and specifically food, school farms, kind of a bill that would allow what they call cottage food, where there'd be fewer restrictions on the kind of artisanal products you'd make at your home. So that might be, if we're looking for a new thing, that's the closest thing I can find to something relatively new.
There's also, let me just jump in about the agriculture stuff, because you're right. That's a little bit of a different twist. I don't know if the artisanal one deals with the bento arguments that we've had for years. What are the regulations for bentos? But an issue that could have caused a lot of trouble, GMOs, has sort of gone into the background.
Now it's pesticides.
Yeah,
pesticides, but the pesticides bill is a relatively limited bill. It has to do with buffer zones, basically, and announcing that you're going to use them. It doesn't stop any of it. And even that modest bill may not pass. So that's an issue that was a lot more salient 2 years ago and has sort of passed down a ways. And that's fairly typical of the legislature also.
Before we get to a caller who is already there waiting and wants to talk to both of you, is there any difference that you see because this is the first legislative session in the first term of Governor Ige?
I don't know if that has really affected the legislative agenda that much. Although, unlike with Abercrombie, there's just a lot less noise, right? I mean, there's a lot less leadership from the governor. Ige is not down there counting votes and making sure that his package gets through, because in part, there hasn't been a lot of leadership. In fact, I've heard some legislators say from the Democratic Party, they could actually use a little more leadership from the governor. So that may be why we're seeing, you know, them dealing with a variety of issues, but it's not clear that there's one central trajectory to all of this.
And there hasn't been much of a package either.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't that he came in. The press was really always making Abercrombie more bombastic than in fact he was. He wasn't doing a very good job with the legislature, but the idea that Ige is going to come in and, you know, on a horse and take care of all of it is simply not the case. And it really is too early to look at what the effect of his governance is going to be on this session.
Any idea from either of you that perhaps the governor made a calculated choice to not have a large package, to not be very involved, or that's a de facto stance?
Well, I just don't think it's in his nature. I mean, he's a technocrat. He likes to tinker with bills around the edges. He likes to make things work, and you get that impression. I mean, that's filtered down through his staff. So, you know, I think the other thing is, I mean, he saw that, look, the press is after Ige now because they want a more active governor. They want this grand yes. narrative that they can talk about, and he's not going to give it to them. And you know what? I mean, good for him. I'm not sure he needs to feed the beast to be an effective governor.
remember the old saying about Mario Cuomo's old saying about campaigning being prose and campaigning being poetry and governing being prose. Well, Ige, when he ran for office and just won by so much, he wasn't even doing poetry then. I mean, he essentially never really argued on the basis of policy, on the basis of vision, and he chose self-consciously not to, and I think that helps to reinforce what Colin just said.
Which kind of goes back to the point that maybe this was a rather calculated move not to be too terribly involved.
Well, calculated, that's what he is. Yeah, I mean, you know, it is not necessarily a Machiavellian move. It's an Idean
right.
move.
I mean, what you see is what you get.
These are not
the Clintons.
No.
All
yes.
right. We've got callers on the line. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, use that number. If you call us from one of the neighbor islands or if you are someplace else listening to the live stream, glad to have you. You can reach us at 877-941-3689, which is the number that Larry called from Captain Cook. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you. You guys already brought up the fact that dramatic events tend to happen toward the end of the leg session. In your educated and experienced opinion, what is the bill most likely to suffer, gut, and replace, and what could they transform it into?
Oh, good. You're asking for someone to prognosticate here a little bit. If we had some crystal balls, we'd gladly share with you.
Please do.
Thank you, Larry. Well, I'm thinking of, I don't know about what gets replaced, but I think that the bills that have the kind of danger of disappearing that you're talking about are the same bills that have disappeared regularly for a long time. Look, you can think of it two ways. One way is to say, we've been working on this for a long time and now's the time. Think about the marijuana dispensers and think about dispensaries and think about the public-private partnerships to save the state hospital system. Yeah. You can also look at it the other way and say those might be the ones who are most likely to go down the tubes again because there's nothing really conceptually different. There are no events that are different. So I think you might see those kinds of things. It's hard to predict the replace part of it. It also depends how the legislators are using their respective rules. That's about as much as I can say. Colin has a much better answer.
Well, I wish I did, but I'm just going to follow you.
I just
you
said
here.
You did.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, like you were saying, Neil, I mean, there are some bills like marijuana, perhaps some of these food security bills, certainly the vacation rentals bill, where it looks good to present, to get these a certain way down the path, right? I mean, we have to remember always when we're watching bills go through, it's not the case that just because a bill moved through the process that everyone in the legislature, even sometimes the people who sponsored the bill, actually want that to become law. I mean, these are, in part, this is a way legislators communicate that they're thinking about marijuana decriminalization. They're on the side of people who are interested in that.
You mean that sort of thinking out loud?
Yeah, thinking out loud or signaling to their constituents that you know, they're in their corner, even if they don't think there's any hope of these bills ever becoming law. I mean, think, for example, of the vacation rentals bill, right? I mean, this is about more serious enforcement and more regulations about all of these apparently illegal vacation rentals that go on, right? I mean, the state doesn't get as much money from it. Neighborhoods are upset because they have all these tourists in houses that weren't zoned that way. But realistically, I'm not sure they're going to pass that. And if they do, it's probably won't be enforced. So those sorts of bills that Neil mentioned, I think that's what we're going to see disappear.
Larry, are you following particular issues this time around?
I was following the marijuana dispensary bill, and I more or less agree that it's a public face on an issue that a lot of people agree on, but they're not likely to actually pass something they have to implement. So I'm more or less thinking that.
All right, Larry, thanks very much for the call. Glad to hear from you. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689. Today is the day that the bills cross over to the House in which they did not originate. And if you are following certain issues, if you've been disappointed that certain issues haven't made it, we want to hear from you, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Want to ask both of you a question that sometimes comes up where people say, look, we have this enormous amount of bills that starts every session, and a lot of those bills really don't have a chance of passage because, well, some of them would say they're not constitutional, or they're worded improperly, the language is sticky and cumbersome, all kinds of things, but clearly lawmakers are trying to address the needs of certain constituents. And they may not even be able to do that, but they want to say, look, at least we did something. Do you think that plays into how much we see at the beginning? And is there any way of being able to stem that? I mean, it's a lot of bills.
Absolutely. Bills. I mean, in Hawaii in particular, I think we have more bills introduced than most other states. And I don't know if we need to stem it. I mean, I think there's some value in just floating a bunch of ideas, getting the public to feel that their voice was heard, even if this bill never had a prayer of becoming law. I think it's great. I mean, this is democracy. I don't think it really confuses anything. I mean, maybe in the committee hearing, where, I mean, if you're concerned about time being a valuable resource. But aside from that, I think this is great. I mean, more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned. Let's get these ideas out there, even if they're crazy.
I think I haven't seen many state legislatures in action, but I'm willing to bet that no state has more people milling around the Capitol, schmoozing, talking story, wearing warm clothes if you're experienced at it because the rooms are cold, and trying to get the attention of some of the legislators. The legislators go absolutely bonkers during this early part of the session, and it's what it is, I guess. It's something that you just say is part of the process. I would hope that most people understand that that most of these things go by the boards. I think it would help to make a better explanation about why that's the case, about how much power the committee chairs have to just kind of dink a bill. But it's a real interesting place to watch all of these people down there. Unfortunately, they're mostly older people because the older people are more active in politics. It's also a lot of university people who, as a matter of fact, really shouldn't be down there doing their own individual lobbying because technically the university is supposed to speak in more than one voice. But in one voice, but good luck with that.
That's what you used to try to do to be the university's voice.
Yeah. But I guess it adds a bit of color. There's no way. This is not a New England town meeting. There's simply no way that you could process all of those things and deal with them.
We have so many issues and so many things that we're going to try to cram into this hour. But really curious what you're paying attention to, what you've been really disappointed by this session. Is there an issue that you felt like there it goes again? Or are you, in fact, having some small victories that the rest of us aren't paying attention to? We want to hear from you, 941-3689, 877-941-3689. There were a couple bills that passed that would have raised the age of a tobacco sale to 21. And then this morning, we got the Institute on Medicine's report that had been mandated by Congress and finally got that. The FDA was told they had to have a report. We talked about that earlier this morning. There seems to be a case building for raising the age that one can purchase tobacco products to 21. You think it really has a prayer?
I think that it has a semi-prayer. How's that for a hedge? I think there might be sympathy toward it, but it goes back to how cautious this legislature is, just generally. And I think that they may decide to wait a little bit. There are people in the legislature who are very, very strong about smoking and would certainly support this sort of thing. And then there are a few more vociferous ones who don't like it. But I think that I think it's not a done deal by any means.
Colin?
Yeah, I agree with Neil. I mean, at some point, though, I mean, tobacco has moved from having, you know, being kind of a tough issue to legislate on to being, you know, almost a valence issue. I mean, there's very few people who are really opposed in the general population to more regulations on smoking. I mean, raising the age to 21 sounds like a reasonable thing to do. I know there's opposition, and of course, as Neil mentioned, the legislature is cautious, but you know, they've already banned smoking altogether, for example, at the University of Hawaii campus. I mean, you can't even smoke outside. So,
yeah, the parks now, too.
It's parks, you know, whatever you think about this, I mean, politically, it's become pretty easy to beat up on smokers. And, you know, this bill that sounds like you're trying to protect children from starting smoking, I mean, that's good politics.
All right. Now, while we're still sort of under the banner of health care, originally, when we started to talk, you brought up the issue about the Hawaii Health Systems Corporation. And,
yes.
And early on, we talked to them and looking to see whether there would be help for the Maui regional system where they could possibly enter an agreement with a private entity. That seems to be going forward. Other issues surrounding the HSSC, too.
Yes, the Maui one has been the leader of the pack for a long time. Every community hospital is in trouble. The whole system just bleeds money, and that's not going to get any better. For some reason, it looks like the focus will be on Maui this year to pass it. And as I said before, it's got a reasonable chance, but given the history in the past, given the union opposition and very strong, smart union opposition, it's by no guarantee. The Star Advertiser said there's certain things you want to be careful about in terms of competition and who's actually going to get this thing to operate as a private partnership. But that still leaves all of these other community hospitals bleeding money, and I don't see anything that's going to change that as dramatically as what they're trying to change with Maui, which means they're going to have to come up with some more cash to keep it afloat.
Yeah, I mean, something's got to give here, but again, I mean, when it comes time to move this bill, what are the nurses going to say? What is the union going to say? And I mean, that's what's killed it in the past. I mean, the same, you could say a similar thing about plans to save the health connector, right? I mean, it's going to get what I understand is a $28 million loan. But one plan is to possibly put all 40,000 public employees for the state into the connector, into the system, which would stabilize it. The problem is, it's not entirely clear to me what the public employees would gain from becoming part of the exchange. It certainly would stabilize the exchange, but that's going to be tough to push through. I can't imagine the unions are going to go for that.
I'm not privy to the negotiations, but I assume the hang-up for the unions is the issue of job security. And if you go private, you probably have to work out some kind of negotiated deal about job security and what can be, you know, which people can be laid off, when can you fire a person. That's tough stuff, and I'm sympathetic toward the unions about that. But getting back to the long term here, we've been working on this same thing for a long time. And if they can't find a way to do it now, it's not because they're not smart enough. It's because they've decided that they don't want to deal with the opposition of the unions. And I understand the union's position on it. Yeah. I'm sympathetic about it. These are health professionals. They've done good work, and they shouldn't be suddenly rolled over like some multinational bought them out, or, you know, on a leveraged buyout, and then just throw them all out on the street.
Before we leave healthcare or anything having to do with health or public policy, we talked about tobacco. We didn't talk about the electronic smoking devices, prohibiting those in the same places that smoking would be prohibited. That also crossed over. Before we leave, anything having to do with health, do you want to weigh in on that one? Not really. Okay.
Not about e-cigs.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I think.
You and a lot of people. Okay.
Yeah, I think they may ban the e-cig
suspect so.
All right.
I always picture Betty Davis in those old movies, sophisticated movies, lighting up an e-cig, right?
You know, Photoshop that in
where she's her beautiful hand, and he's holding, you know, she's holding the guy's hand as he lights her e-cig.
You're giving him a good argument here.
Yeah, I know. Well, whatever.
All right. Okay. Next on the list. You've got your list. Colin, you can go first this time.
About anything I want to talk about?
I asked you to make a list of the things that you think were likely to be still issues for us that we're going to continue to talk about in the second half. Also, issues of things that went away that you were unhappy about.
Oh, sure.
So you can pick one from either list.
I'll pick one from both. How about that?
All right, I'll
pick the one that's going to go forward. That's going to be really interesting. Is the what I've termed the Uber bill? Right. There's a proposal to change the way requirements for insurance for Uber drivers, which Uber claims would largely make it impossible. Their business model would fail in Hawaii because they'd have to have this extra insurance, which they claim they already have. This is an interesting bill, mainly to watch who's on which side, right? Because you kind of create this interesting coalition of libertarians and then some younger liberals, I think, against people who are more interested in protecting traditional cabs and limousine services. The bill that didn't go forward, which I think is very interesting, and I think it's very unfortunate, is a bill that would have started a statewide police board, a board that would be involved in the credentialing of police, that would monitor all of the police departments. Right now, it's only at the county level. And as I understand it, Hawaii is the only state in the nation that doesn't have one of these statewide boards, and that failed.
All right. Two from you.
Two for me. Well, let's start with.
Oh, you can start with one.
Well, let's start with the one that I was thinking about while Colin was talking. Of course, still listening to Colin, and that's the one about early education. I've talked about this time and again. This is a period of time. The quick history: the Abercrombie administration had pushed very hard for the beginning of a universal pre-K education, so we would join the majority of the states in this country, and it would be done by a public-private partnership. Governor Ige, when he was a candidate, opposed that. The HDST opposed it. A lot of them did. The referendum that would have allowed the state to give money to private schools to do this was defeated. So that now left a model that said if you're going to do it, the state's going to have to pay for it. So what they've done is set up some kind of early education operation that I think actually operates probably out of the governor's office, I think, technically, like the Office of Aging.
The Executive Office on Early Learning.
Yeah, Executive Office on
Pre-Kindergarten Programs.
And the bill says a lot of things in there about moving forward toward early education. It doesn't use the word universal exactly. It's a long preamble talking about all the advantages of having these kinds of things, and then it sort of stops there. There's a date at the end of it to be continued. I think that the problem with this, although I'm glad they're doing something, is this is following all of the kinds of turtle-like patterns that the Hawaii legislature follows often, moving very, very slowly, very, very cautiously, not committing very much to it. I'm happy that there is a start, but long-term, Is there going to
be a finish?
Well, that's right. Or is it just going to... Is it just going to go on like this?
And money, not a lot of...
There's no money. I don't know if it's a money bill or not. There was nothing in it that said the money would be appropriated. And there is an operation going already. I think the other stuff we talked about a little bit already, and that's the agricultural stuff, the buffer zone bill, which is a very innocuous bill. Yeah. And that even may not pass.
All right. Let's go to John calling us from Kaneohe and find out what he has to say. Aloha, John. Welcome to Town Square.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. My concern is I see and talk with people every day whose family members are basically being deported to Vegas or someplace on the mainland because these are just regular families. I'm not talking about the homeless. I'm not people who live and work here and are from here even. And it seems like, they have no hope of being able to purchase homes or being able to live here. Is there any bills that are trying to not just make this another Martha Vineyards yard for the Pacific or something where only really wealthy people can live here, besides putting them in boxes like the mats and containers?
Well, so I'll take a crack at this. I mean, this is, I think, the crisis for the state. Part of the issue is there's not a clear policy solution to this. I mean, that we would think of as something that's not very aggressive, going to Singapore-style public housing. But I think it's a real serious concern. And I was really disappointed because there was a bill that addressed this a bit. It was this poverty relief bill, SB 902. And what it did was it raised the standard deduction for renter credit for the food and excise tax deduction. And that would have really helped lower income folks, particularly raising the deduction for rental rates. And that didn't pass through. That didn't go through. And I'm really upset about that. I mean, I think that when people talk a lot about making things more affordable, but when it actually would cost the state some money to do that, those bills don't tend to move forward. And I agree with you. This is a crisis, and the legislature does not seem to be addressing it very directly.
I'm even more pessimistic. First of all, a lot of these are what you would call structural. The problems are structural.
Yeah.
There isn't much land. There's a lot of people. And it's constrained on where you're going to build. And so essentially this is going to be a place of housing scarcity. And if you look at the data, the difference between the number of affordable houses we have and the number that are being built, it's astonishingly the disparity. It's like 50,000 needed over a certain period of time, and they're going to build maybe 4,000 or 5,000. So it's more than just having the will. You see little pockets. You see the kinds of things that Colin was talking about. And, of course, what's interesting, you don't give the benefit to a renter, but you give a huge benefit to an owner who gets, you know, essentially a tax write-off, and you don't even want to give it to the renter. Some of the things in Kaka'ako are going to open up some housing for others, including some that's really fairly cheap. And some of the public housing, the Mayor Wright place is going to be rebuilt. But I'm afraid that just as my kids have found out and aren't going to come back, that this is a place where the tariff, the struggle, is going to be pretty much the same as it always. There is not going to be a new industrial base, a sudden increase in jobs, the need for a kind of well-paying workforce. I mean, that's a problem everywhere, especially for high school students. And I guess people just have to recognize that. That doesn't mean you don't do what you can. You don't, you know, there's some nice stuff going on in regard to building Ohana's housing. Mayor Caldwell has some good ideas. And that helps here. It helps there. But I think that you're either going to have to live in conditions that are much smaller and more limited, or live with your parents, or live in less than you could live elsewhere because you love Hawaii.
Well, that's going to be the defining line. How much do you love it to stay here?
Yes, I think that's right.
And whereas that question has been around for quite a while, it's only becoming more acute and pronounced now.
And here's the problem that question raises. If you live in Iowa and you don't love Iowa, so you go over to Nebraska and see how Omaha is. You know, you don't disrupt yourself from your family, right? Now, you went all the way across country to go to college. That's but you can't do that here. The degree of disruption is much greater.
All right, we got more callers on the line. If you want to join us, here's the number, 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, that's the number to use. And if you're listening to the live stream, if you're on a neighbor island, you want to talk to us, we want to talk to you too. Our number to call is 877-941-3689. And we have Veridon calling us from Boulder, Colorado. Aloha, welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Thank you for having Town Square.
A pleasure. What are you paying attention to all the way over there in Boulder, Colorado, as we're talking across the ocean?
Well, I'm using one of two public radio apps. They occasionally crash, but I diligently restart them to listen because I love the aloha of Hawaii.
Well, thank you for that. But as you look at our legislature from where you are and some of the issues that we've been talking about, anyone in particular getting your attention?
Well, there's murmurs. This really isn't, I think, a bill on the floor, although there's murmurs in committees and so on. The issue is about health freedom legislation. We just passed some in Colorado and New Mexico, and a number of states preceded us. And pretty much it clears up some infighting between practitioners or might. I heard that there's a homeopathic doctor, I believe in Honolulu, who is having trouble because there's existing naturopath legislation, and there's history with naturopath legislation across the country. There's no reason it can't be, you know, there, and people can't do what they do. But there's something called health freedom legislation, and I've heard rumors about something kicking up in Hawaii, and I'm just curious how that's going, because I think it solved a lot of trouble. It really freed people up to do the healing work that they need to do, because, well, in Hawaii, you know, we just don't have enough. The doctors are hard to get and keep in Hawaii for some reason.
We've had a physician shortage for a very, very long time, particularly on the neighbor islands. Thanks very much for paying attention to what's going on in Hawaii, and thanks for listening to us, and we're glad
so
that we've got you on the live stream.
Have you heard anything about health freedom legislation?
Well, we'll put that question out there and find out. If there are those who are listening who have been looking specifically at that issue, Give us a call now, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Very often we have, you know, boutique issues that people pay attention to because it really deeply affects them and what they do in their lives. And we've heard this before. We've had this with midwives and others who've said, you know, there just isn't a sense of fairness with all this. How do we practice properly and not have to go through many more hoops than, you know, they feel is necessary that happens in other states? You want to weigh in on this at all?
Well, I was going to ask him what the legislation was, because I have some idea from what they're saying, and it may have to do with the regulation of various kinds of alternative or complementary medicine. Mm-hmm. And if I would have found that out, we could have maybe said a little bit more about it. The issue comes up here every once in a while. It came up with Reiki, and the Reiki people backed away from it. It came up with Hawaiian practitioners when Waimea first began that hospital. How do you combine that kind of native healing and so on? It's a pretty standard sort of issue, but coming up in Colorado, I'm guessing that it had something to do with, say, homeopaths and other kinds of things. I think naturopaths are pretty much protected by regulation. There's a school. I mean, you have a school. The general rule is if you have a school and if you have a code of professional ethics and you're not too intrusive, those are the three things that keep you safe.
Well, I mean, there's a larger issue this brings up, too. I mean, this is just part of broader changes in American healthcare, where there's been a move to change the model to licensing nurse practitioners, midwives, creating all of these new allied health professionals, which in theory will reduce costs, improve access. And that's something that I think here in Hawaii we really can benefit from. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we have a physician shortage, more nurse practitioners, more midwives. I mean, those are, I think, great moves which help everyone.
All right. We'll leave that one for the moment. Thanks very much for the call. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. You listen to the news, you read the headlines, you hear bits and pieces of what's going on in the legislature. But what is taking your attention as we're now at the halfway point today? Is there something you think that may make it through this time but hasn't before? Are you, in fact, trying to help that along by being involved in a way that you haven't been before, or maybe you have been for a very long time? We want to hear from you, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on the disappointments, because we are where we are, with the exception of some, you know, notable pieces that you talked about a little earlier. But anything else so that we can just sort of move through this that you think that really should have had better legs this time around than didn't, aside from the police bill?
Well, yes, it depends what's going to happen with it, and that is the media shield bill.
Oh, yes. Good point.
The media shield bill, quick history is what there used to not be a bill, and the media people, the media council, and lots of others, First Amendment lawyers, said there should be a shield bill. A shield bill, in effect, protects the sources of a reporter from the criminal justice system. You don't have to reveal your sources. Clayton Hee always objected to a shield bill, and so they finally backed away because they were worried that Clayton Hee was going to do something really bad. Now Clayton Hee is gone, and they thought they'd have a better shot. And the bill that is has been introduced and I think is crossed by Representative Rhodes is really a much worse bill than having none at all. It allows the government to go in and to take your papers. The newspapers.
Your unpublished,
unpublished papers. Yeah, basically your notes. And I have no idea why that's been. Nobody has really acted to justify it. There's going to be a lot of arguments against it, but that's really bad. That's more and more you have to rely on, as you can see, on investigative reporting, on people doing that kind of work. And this is even not just investigative reporting. This is doing your daily work. You know, what are they going to do, grab Guy Hagi's latest weather report that he's carrying around in the back of his pocket? They could. Yeah, Hagi, you're under arrest. Yeah. Anyway, that's for carrying the surf report. And no, seriously, it's a bad bill. And it's crossed over for reasons that I don't understand.
I agree. It's a terrible bill. And what I don't understand, maybe Neil knows more about this than I do, is who is in favor of this exactly? I mean, the media is furious. I mean, other people this is not something they pay a whole lot of attention to, just consumers of the news. So what's the coalition behind it? Is this a group of trial lawyers so they can get access and justify later but suits? Or I don't understand the politics.
That raises an interesting beef. Why don't we have an answer for that? Why hasn't the media gone out and looked around at this thing?
But that's the point, because when you look at some of the testimony, you don't see media folks coming out in droves to be able to respond to this, even initially. And so, that question is, why this bill? Why would anyone stand for this if you're in the media?
But that's not my point. My point is not that the media should be against it, although I think they should. My point is, it seems to be a pretty important question. Why isn't anybody looking into it?
Yeah.
We get the same kind of stories every day about the legislature. This bill goes forward. Somebody testifies, blah, 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 blah. You don't get anything. And it goes to what I've said before, that there's a whole bunch of black boxes that we don't know very much about, not the least of which is the coalitions that exist in the legislature. So part of it is that nobody goes about trying to answer that question. The old answer was, and it was an answer by default, the old answer was Clayton Hee had a vendetta. It had a certain plausibility about it because Clayton Hee could be the type of person that did it. When he's gone, it shows how limited that vendetta explanation was. Yeah. But if it's an important question, then people whose job it is to find answers to public questions should be doing that.
All right. We're going to leave that one for the moment. There are so many unanswered questions with that one. And we've had some offline discussions trying to figure out why isn't there a whole lot of answers to this. Then you saw Jerry Katos'
fine piece
on it about why and why it was a miserable piece and should fail because it's not serving the very people it purports to protect. We'll leave that for that moment because we just don't have any answers to that. But going on to another big issue in Hawaii, we always talk about energy. And now we have a bill that's crossed over that says that we should have a renewable portfolio standard to 70% by 2035, 100% by 2045. And it's putting a lot of pressure on the PUC to study and report all those requirements and to do all that. And a lot of people saying, hey, it's really feasible if we would just get down and do it, which comes back to the initial question, do we really get down and do some of this? Or will this be one of those issues, Neil, like you talk about all the time, where we get moving along, but as you call it, sort of turtle issues, and then we don't do very much about?
Well, I think one of the things that moves this issue forward, maybe not all forward and some steps back, is that the private sector is involved with this and that the PUC is very active. So that you certainly, because of the company taking over Hawaiian Tel, HECO, there's going to be a lot of negotiating back and forth and so on. So on that big item, there's certainly going to be the case. The other kinds of sustainability, it's never been clear to me, and it's because I don't know that much about it, not because that other people don't, how much you can get from sustainability from other things. You can certainly get a more sustainable agricultural product, but what is the estimate I've seen? You could maybe grow 20% of your food here, which is a big improvement, but still only 20% of your food. The other energy thing that's interesting is that the legislature is likely to pass a law eliminating the ethanol requirement for gasoline. Ethanol is basically a useless product in gasoline that is still in existence to satisfy the corn farmers in the Midwest. Here, they couldn't even get the special interest to ginny up. I mean, this
it's
is not
like they couldn't get off.
Well,
the ground,
they couldn't
really
get the sugar. Yeah, you couldn't even make the ethanol, the sugar, and it's not surprising. There wasn't enough incentive there to build plants, I don't think, or to reboot plants, and so it just didn't make any sense to get the ethanol out of sugar, so companies didn't do it.
Well, on this one?
Sure. I mean, what I'll say about this, I mean, if we're thinking broadly about these sustainability issues, this is an issue where I think Governor Ige is going to play an important role. I mean, he has said he's supportive of lots of this, but he has said he wants the goals to be aggressive but realistic. I think this is the stuff he really enjoys digging into. So as the governor sort of makes his plans more clear, I think all of this will become more clear and how much he from the executive is going to push for this. Because I think for issues like this, a lot of the energy really does have to come from the top, as it did under Abercrombie. And I think it will continue to, perhaps in different ways, under Ige.
Is it really practicable that the UH be a net zero energy user by 2035 too?
Well, look, I mean, I'm a political analyst. There's probably someone who has a better answer for that than I could ever give. But I think it's great to have aggressive goals.
All right. Well, we'll see what kind of aggressive goals we hear from Wiley calling us from Kamwela. And if you'd like to be next, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Taking a look at Crossover at the Ledge, what are you paying attention to? What was a big disappointment? And what might be an issue that you think we haven't paid enough attention to? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Aloha, Wiley. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. I was wondering how the status of the ivory banning bill going forward. I'm for the bill. And the reason I am, it kind of segues into your discussion about alternative medicine. 2 years ago, a Chinese medicine practitioner of 20 years told me with a straight face that ivory powder cures leukemia, and which I was just, you know, aghast.
All right.
That's my question and comment.
Well, thank you for the question, and we'll talk about that. We did talk a lot about that ivory bill on The Conversation when it first came out many weeks ago now. You want to pick that up a little bit, Neil?
It's going forward. It's going forward for sure. It's part of an international movement to limit the slaughter of elephants that is very hard to stop. But the theory is, if you stop the selling of it, if you make the market hard, they'll continue to be a black market on it because of the fact that people see it for all kinds of reasons, like curative reasons.
All right, that's the answer that we've got for you. You want to get in on that, or shall we move on? All right, we're going to move on. If you want to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going now to John calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, John. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha, and thank you for taking my call. I am calling in the interest of equal rights, speaking out against raising the age for buying tobacco. Adults 18 to 21 have all of the legal liabilities of being adults. They can be sued, they can be tried, they can be imprisoned as adults. I think denying them the right to choose if they want to use tobacco products puts them in a sort of second-class citizenship status. We used to have that type of status based on racial grounds, where some groups had more rights as adults than others because of their race. Now we're doing it on the basis of age. As Neil pointed out earlier, young adults are very easy to beat up on because they're not politically organized, whereas if a special interest group comes to the legislature and says, we want you to do this, the special interest group is well organized. And so for that reason, I oppose raising the age for buying tobacco. I don't advocate it. I mean, I don't advocate tobacco smoking, but I think all adults should have equal rights making that decision, and listen to what you folks have to say out
there.
All
right, but before you go, John, because you know part of the argument for that has always been, well, look, we don't usually say you can drink until you're 21. How do you maintain some sense of constancy with those things that we say belong in adult behaviors?
I oppose that too. I think if you have all of the legal liabilities of being an adult, not just the opportunity to get married without your parents' permission or the opportunity to join the army without your parents' permission, you should have all of the rights and privileges. And I believe very strongly adults 18, 19, and 20 should be able to legally drink alcohol for the interest of it's an equal rights argument, and in Hawaii it's also a very strong economic argument. We lost a tremendous amount of income, particularly from summer tourism back in the 80s, when the drinking age was raised from 18 to 21, and Senator Inouye didn't prevent it. Nobody uses interstate highways to come to Hawaii. Nobody under 25, I believe, can legally rent a car in Hawaii. So an 18 or 19-year-old who comes here to drink legally can't endanger others by renting a car and driving around. So I, since you brought it up, yes, I think the drinking age should also be all for all adults and not just adults older than a certain age.
John, thanks very much for the call. Let's see what Colin and Neil have to say. Colin, you want to take that first?
Well, that's a very articulate, I think, and clear argument against this. I mean, philosophically, I think it's I think it's a very reasonable point. I mean, I guess what I'd like to point out here are how the politics around tobacco work differently today. And there is an irony, which other people have mentioned, which is we're trying to raise the tobacco age to 21. At the same time, there's a lot of pressure to either decriminalize marijuana or create marijuana dispensaries. Now, I just mentioned that because you see these very different political coalitions, right? It's part of this, I think, progressive narrative that we want to make tobacco products more difficult to get. At the same time, we want to make marijuana easier to get. And you can think through that. I mean, there are reasons, reasonable people can explain why these are different products. But I really appreciate this comment because I do think it's a perfectly reasonable point.
Yes, it's perfectly reasonable, but one-sided. It's one-sided. I mean, it's like it's essentially it's a more flexible, more reasoned libertarian argument. And I don't mean to dismiss it by being libertarian. I mean to take it seriously. What's going on here is an emphasis on individual autonomy. And the other thing we consider in a polity is the good and the role of the collective. And you have to be pretty much of a libertarian not to do that. Remember that this is an issue that's now become a health issue. At one time, it was a health issue because doctors used to encourage you to smoke. It's now a health issue. So in many ways, it starts feeling like the vaccination, like the measles vaccination, where there is particular pressure to say, look, you're harming others, other passive, innocent people. Colin is absolutely right. This is a very articulate argument. It's not about I smoked when I was in the Marines or anything like that. But in a polity, you have to decide what that kind of balance was. Even he was making these decisions. So you let him drink at 18 but not at 17.
Okay, but what about the idea that we're getting – I mean, not idea, but just hard science coming out of the brain research community that says, you know, really, we don't really have that seat of judgment that crystallizes in our brains until we're middle 20s. So how do you expect people to make good decisions early on? Why give them the tools to make bad ones?
Well, because we don't let science totally determine our lives. And as you and I have talked about on the show, science hardly plays any role at all, much less than I would like it to think. I think that's part of – you know, we're talking – there's a difference between a legal process and a social process. People make laws because there has to be some kind of distinctions. Something is good, something is bad, something is gray, something is not. Those are crude distinctions. They're made in the interest of efficiency and getting the best kind of equity possible. Law doesn't deal in nuance very much. I mean, law would make it would be very hard for somebody to argue you can be a, you know, you can drink if you're 21, if your brain's, you know, if your brain was sufficiently matured, you could see all the kids lining up for getting CAT scans, you know.
Moving on.
A CAT scan happening. Yeah, okay.
All right. Yeah. If you'd like to join this conversation, we're taking a look at what's moving through the ledge as of today. It's crossover. It's halftime. And not that this is the halftime show, but we could argue that maybe it is. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 to weigh in on what you're paying attention to, what you've been disappointed by, what hasn't gotten enough attention as far as you're concerned. We want to hear from you. Going now to Danielle, calling us from Maui. Aloha, Danielle. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you.
I'm wondering if any of the bills that had the mandatory sick leave attached to it, if they crossed over.
Don't think so. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
They've gotten very little buzz.
Which is why she's bringing it up.
One was stuck in committee, but I think there was another one that seemed, and I don't know if it was in the House or the Senate, if it was moving or not.
We have a less complete list of the Senate stuff right now. They're a little slow, so we don't know for sure. We can take a look.
We'll take a look and we'll find out. But that's one of the ones that, you know, sort of not being talked about a whole lot. We did when it first came out and thought, you know, will there be some of these things that we made consistent with other places? But don't have a firm answer for you. But we will get you one, Danielle.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Colin Moore is here. Neil Milner is here. We're doing what we always do, sitting down at the halfway point of the legislative session and looking at where we are. You know, we've sort of made the comment that many times in the first half. So many bills come through that may not have a prayer of ever getting to this point, but it's part of the democratic process. You like that, Colin Moore. You do too, Neil. But it does take a lot of tension.
I thought you were going to say you didn't.
No, of course not. But the point being that it takes a lot of time to be able to go through a lot of these bills, and sometimes you just have good things that don't get any attention for, you know, whatever reason. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this bill as soon as we can get some info on it. All right, we're going to go now to Gary from Eva. Aloha, Gary. Welcome to Town Square.
Hello. Yeah, I've got a question about one of the House bills dealing with a bond issue for building a racetrack at Barbers Point.
Oh, yes.
You know, this thing is
yeah, Neil likes that.
Well,
usage.
This has been around for a while, right? And I understand that Senator Luke managed to waive the rules to virtually eliminate any possibility of a public hearing on this. At least this is what I read
that's,
today.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that once that thing is exposed that way, it's going to cause some problems. This has been around for a long time. It has a rich history that makes it much more important than you would think, because there have been some heavy players in it. I think that once they found this out about the way they were trying to handle the bill, will get a lot of negative attention for a while. But this may be one that sneaks through at the end and that they finally get what they want. I'm always very interested by why government should be involved in this, but that's where it stands. Do you have any what's your comment on it? You're clearly chuckling.
I think taxpayers' money should be used for this.
Yeah, really?
It's a minority issue. It's, you know, and we've got a lot of more important things in the state to do.
Well, here's the deal. I'm retired, and I'd like to drive that pace car with the checkered flag. You know, the guy that waves and starts your engines.
That's not a retired public employee benefit.
That's
in
right. No, I was a race car fan as a kid. I came from a great racing city, but I never thought about the government paying for it.
All right.
No, the government shouldn't be involved, yeah.
But your point, you know, the government has a lot more that it should be doing with its time, and there's so much more. I mean, that's always part of this conversation. Every time we see bills like this come through, yet again. Now, before we get too far away from Danielle's question, she was asking about the mandatory sick leave bill. Neither one went through.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah, pretty early on.
Good work.
All right. Well, we try to get answers when we can. Anyway, as we're coming close to 6 o'clock, and obviously we can't get through all the bills, all of the issues that have gone through, but there are certain sectors that maybe we need to go back and revisit just a little bit. Anything more that either one of you want to say about some of the bills that we had on the list that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about yet? Neil?
I think we've pretty much covered the ones. You keep thinking about it, but I think that's pretty much what was... Oh, wait a second.
Whoa.
We didn't talk about rail, did we?
We did not talk about rail.
I feel like we've been thinking about it the whole time.
That's
yes.
Right. We have not talked about rail. There are two bills that have gone forward that would help to finance rail and help to get it out of the financial jam that it's in of unknown proportions, even though it's claimed that we know. One of them would just keep the tax going for a certain number of years, and the other one would reduce the tax but keep it going indefinitely, right? And also allow the counties to have their own excise tax. This is a very tough call for the legislature, because they don't like to be put in this position. And I think that they figure they were put in this position. This is not their doing. Other than setting up the tax, and now they have to do something. There is no way that they're not going to do something here. We've talked about this on the other. Rail is going to go forward. Yeah. Whether you like it or not, it's going to go forward.
Yeah, and you can see in their frustration, they're sort of grasping at trying what they were calling to get the city to put some skin in the game, either through property taxes or something, some way to punish the city for what they see as, and I think reasonably so, purposefully either not modeling these revenue estimates correctly or simply just ignoring what was this looming problem for years until they simply could say, hey, we don't have enough money to finish this. Should we just leave these pylons standing in the middle of the island? Well, of course not. So I think they know they're going to do something. I mean, obviously, it's going to continue to be funded. It would be crazy to stop now. But they want this. They want to punish the city. They were even angry that enough city members of the city council didn't show up to plead their case. And basically, I think, to be dragged in front of the Senate and harangued, which is, you know, part of the legislative process. Certainly, the Senate loves to do that at the national level. And
they did it here.
And here, too.
Yeah. All right. Before we have to say goodbye, I want to ask you about some of the domestic violence bills. Because we saw a lot of them move through the beginning of the session. There was a lot of pressure, the sort of reaction to what we saw last summer. We still have several of them alive, one that provides a safe mechanism for reporting complaints regarding domestic violence when you have a police officer involved. And obviously that came right out of the headlines. Any chance you think that this thing is going to continue to move? There's enough pressure to make that happen when traditionally we've seen very much apropos to what you talked about earlier, Colin, with not seeing the police commission bill go
forward. Well, that's why I'm discouraged. I mean, I really found the police commissioner bill that it failed, although the reasons that were given for why it failed was that, you know, the usual ones that we need to study it longer. We need, you know, it's the first time it's come up. We can't pass it yet. I mean, really, I don't buy those arguments, but I don't feel particularly optimistic because I really thought that bill stood a chance, and the fact that it was so easily killed was discouraging.
Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine anybody publicly opposing the special way to report domestic violence if a police officer is involved. But that may mean that the bill just quietly dies somewhere along the line. It doesn't require argument for it, an argument against it for the bill to die. This is at least a fairly specialized one. There's a germ of truth in what they're saying about the Bill Collin just talked about.
And one more thing, when it comes to sort of revamping the state tax collection system.
Well, that's a David Egave special. He really likes to do that kind of stuff. You know, there's always ways to get money by more efficiently from a tax system, because there's always enough scofflaws and those kinds of things there. I think it's a wise thing to do. I think Ige is going to get support for it. But
it's all a matter of just studying it.
Right. It's all a matter of studying it. You know, one of the ways you get these kinds of stuff is to have more people who are actually doing audits and who are actually looking out to see where the money is. And that's always been a problem.
All right. Well, we've got just a couple minutes before we have to say goodbye, as we're now moving into the second half, where things will be ramping up to that fast and furious pace that we'll see in the last couple of days. Anything in particular that you're looking at for this time, or that words of wisdom that you would pass on from either one of you?
Well, I think that there's nothing here to say it isn't going to be more of the same, which means that there isn't going to be a lot of important legislation that passes. There may be some things that we've talked about that the legislature has been dealing with for a long time. The fact that they've been dealing with them for a long time, you could look at as saying that makes it more likely to get them passed. The fact that they're dealing with them for a long time could also mean they have less.
Except maybe that Uber bill that you and I
were saying. Except the Uber bill.
That's right. But the Uber bill.
Genuinely new.
Yeah, that's right. Genuinely new. And that makes it hard to the legislature may not want to cope with that. But we'll see.
All right. You got 30 seconds.
I think just pay attention. I mean, this is what makes these conversations so important. John Oliver had a great line. The comedian says, in American politics, if you want to do something evil, put it inside something boring.
Yeah.
And you can see bits of that in our own state legislature here.
Oh, well, I don't think we can end on anything better than that. Thanks very much to Colin Moore and to Neil
Miller.
You're
welcome.
And to you for the calls. And we will talk to you very soon. I'll see you tomorrow morning right here for the conversation at 8 o'clock. Meanwhile, have a good evening. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha. We'll